Quickly! Quickly! Get up, get dressed. Bring your tunic as well, it's cold out there.
What is it? What's going on?
They have arrested Jesus. They are saying that he's being taken to Pilate.
What? What are you talking about? Who's taking him to Pilate? What has he done?
I don't know, but we must leave now. I saw him bound by the authorities, and they were taking him out of the house of Caiaphas.
That's not possible. We've made full preparations for the Passover. He must have done something awful for them to take him during the feast.
Hurry, please! I must find out what they are saying and what they intend to do. We need to go.
Okay, let me get my things.
Come on, hurry. I have a terrible feeling about all of this. If the Romans get their hands on him, he could be in serious trouble.
Don't worry, brother. We will find out everything that we can and look for ways to help. There may still be something we can do.
Hello, and welcome to the Common Sense Gospel. I am Danny Simmons.
And I'm Kurt Norbert.
And we have been listening in on the two men who have been talking about Jesus. They've been trying to figure out who he is and what he will do for his people. And today we heard them say that they are on their way to the Praetorium, which is where Pilate is. It's hard for me when I hear the anxiety in their voices, their hopes that Jesus will lead them to victory over Rome, and even their willingness to help Jesus if they can. Because we know the story, and we know that all of their hopes and their preconceived notions are about to be dashed. What is coming on this day will surely leave them hopeless.
I think it's really important for us, Danny, to take time as we read the gospel accounts of the passion of Jesus, his suffering. It's so often that we can just read over them superfluously because we're so familiar with the story. But what we're trying to do by listening to these two representatives of the Jewish population is get ourselves in their situation. We need to put ourselves in that place. Try to forget about our 20/20 hindsight vision that the New Testament gives us. Mm. They didn't have that revelation. They lived in their society with the expectation of the Messiah that had been proclaimed to them by the teachers of the law. It was a misconception. And wrestling with how could Jesus be the Messiah? He's doing these amazing things, and his teaching is something we've never heard before. But he doesn't fit what we've been told. And some are coming to belief, some are wrestling with it, some are unbelieving and in rebellion against Jesus. And this is the situation that's facing these individuals. They're looking at Jesus and they're not seeing how all of what they are experiencing happening now, that he is being arrested, it just seems like a disaster. How can this happen to Messiah? We don't understand what's going on, so they're confused. Mm. They might be doubtful. They don't know, because even his closest disciples, even when told plainly, we're going up to Jerusalem, I'm going to be handed over to the Gentiles, I'm going to suffer and die, but I will rise on the third day. It went right over their heads.
They couldn't process
it. They never got it. So I don't believe anyone in Jerusalem or in Israel understood this about Messiah. All they're seeing now is the one that they had pinned all their hopes on is being led away by the authorities. And how can this be?
Yeah, it's starting to get bad, and they're concerned. It's just hard. Because we do know. Our show ended last week as we watched Judas come up to Jesus at night with the Roman soldiers and the officers of the high priest. If you remember with us, Judas kisses Jesus on the cheek, calling him rabbi. And in Matthew 26 and verse 48, it says his betrayer had given them a sign saying, "Whomever I kiss, he is the one, seize him." Judas has a moment here where he is in charge. And I imagine that he relished that moment to stand before Roman soldiers and say, here's what I'll do and here's what you need to do. You know, they give him a little bit of authority just for a minute. And he says, when I go in there, here's my move. And when I do that, you grab him. He tells the Roman soldiers what the plan is and what they should do. And that is all he's going to get, just to tell a handful of Roman soldiers what they should do next. And John's gospel says that there are some of the gospels say they seized him, but right after the kiss, but John's gospel says, Jesus says, whom are you seeking? There's a conversation. So Judas almost loses his role as the guy in charge. So that guy really, it's hard. It's hard to look at him and be balanced in the way we think about him. So in John 18, we pick up in John 18, just after Judas has betrayed Jesus. It says, then the detachment of troops and the captain of the officers of the Jews arrested Jesus and bound him. And they led him away to Annas first, for he was the father-in-law of Caiaphas, who was the high priest that year. Now it was Caiaphas who advised the Jews that it was expedient that one man should die for the people.
You know, what we're seeing here is the beginning of actually several trials that Jesus faced this day. We tend to focus on the council and then Pilate, but he goes before the dual high priesthood. He goes to Caiaphas and then Annas and then to Pilate. And as we're going to see, Pilate sends him to Herod. Herod sends him back to Pilate. There's a big debate between Pilate and the Jews. And so apparently Jesus keeps on, or he is kind of held back from the stage when they're at the Praetorium. Mm-hmm. And Pilate keeps going in and out to Jesus when he'll hear the Jews say something, and he'll come in to Jesus and say, are you the king of the Jews? And just getting more and more anxious and concerned and asking Jesus these questions. And Jesus either doesn't answer or gives Pilate an answer that upsets him even more. So really, and we've emphasized this, the only one who is in complete control through this whole thing is Jesus Christ.
Yep.
The high priests get angry, and they demonstrate and rip their clothes and go through all their histrionics. The people in the audience before the council, one of the officers slaps Jesus and rebukes him. The Jews before Pilate are yelling at him, we want this, we want that, blah, blah, blah. Pilate's getting more and more upset and anxious and not knowing what to do. It is only Jesus who calmly stands there and endures this whole thing. So, as I've been pointing out, and I always like to say, all through this whole night and morning of trials and accusations and blasphemies and everything that Jesus is being subjected to, he is the one who's in charge.
That's right. He is not the victim, he is the victor. You mentioned the different stages of trial. I had looked into this, and I see you laid most of it out. I see six parts to Jesus' trial, mm-hmm. Three stages in a religious court, because he went to Annas first, then Caiaphas. Right. He comes out of Caiaphas' house, and then he'll stand before the Sanhedrin, and that's the three religious court systems that he will stand under. There's different degrees and weight to each trial. They're separated, you know. Some of these people who talk to him, they don't want to do anything to begin with, or they just wanted to see for themselves, Herod being one of those cases. Maybe Annas and Caiaphas, not as serious as the Sanhedrin. When they cast their vote, that's when, you know, there's much more authority there as the group is gathered together to do what they will do. And then there's three civil authorities that he stands if you split Pilate in half. He was in front of Pilate, finds out he's a Galilean, sends him to Herod. Herod can't get anything out of him. He wants nothing to do with it, so he sends him back to Pilate. And so that's six different times he stands before someone who stands in some position of authority and is questioned. And no one can find anything. And they're not looking for evidence very hard anyway. And so in verse 19 of John 18, it says, the high priest then asked Jesus about his disciples and his doctrine. So he's in front of the high priest now and the council. Jesus answered him, I spoke openly in the world. I've always taught in the synagogue and in the temple where the Jews always meet. And in secret, I have said nothing. Why do you ask me? Ask those who have heard me what I have said to them. Indeed, they know what I said. And when he had said these things, one of the officers who stood by struck Jesus with the palm of his hand, saying, "Do you answer the high priest like that?" Jesus answered him, "If I have spoken evil, bear witness of the evil. But if well, why do you strike me?" Then Annas sent him bound to Caiaphas, the high priest. And so he is beginning now to move through these trials, mock trials at best. But we do see this moment in time where the high priest says, "Okay, we want to know two things. Tell us about your doctrine and tell us about your disciples." Jesus didn't mention one of them. See which one it was?
Yeah. When he says, what are your teachings and what are your disciples? He doesn't say anything about his doctrine.
Well, he tells them that he knows, they know what he said.
Yeah. In fact, this is a good legal answer in a court. Because if you're looking for witnesses, which it's told that they were bringing forth false witnesses at the start of the trial, because they're looking for something they need to get on Jesus religiously, because that way the Jews can judge him guilty. And I like the distinction you made, which is, I think, something we need to see in all this. He goes through religious trials, which satisfies the Jews' desire.
Yep.
Then he goes through a civil trial with the Romans because the Jews can only go so far with their religious persecution. They want to put him to death, but they don't have the authority.
Yep.
So then it becomes a religious trial or a civil trial.
Yep.
Because they have to take him to the Romans to execute their desire on all of this. But, you know, to go back to Jesus' response, I don't think it's a disrespectful response or satirical. As always, he just lays reality at their feet. This really is a ludicrous question, because all you have to do is ask any of the people. In fact, your own agents have been tagging along with me, listening to every word I've said. You know what I've said.
That's exactly right.
Your people have reported to you.
You were standing there for most of it.
Yeah.
What are you asking me?
And in fact, when they sent people to arrest him, we talked about it last week, I believe, they came back and said, "We've never heard anyone speak like this."
That's right. That's exactly right.
And so they didn't bring him.
Yep.
So they were aware. Again, it's a leading question, an illegal question, trying to get Jesus to incriminate himself, to say something about his disciples or his doctrine that they can jump on and make accusation against him. And he doesn't give them the opportunity.
It's infuriating.
He says, you've heard my doctrine. So to answer your question, it's the disciples he doesn't talk about. He says, "You've heard my doctrine. You've heard about everything I taught because nothing's been done in secret. I've spoken openly." So what is the purpose of
this
question?
Which is absolutely true.
Yeah.
Man.
And we see the response of evil. We don't like that answer. And so one of them slaps him. And Jesus even rebukes that and shows how ridiculous and wrong and unlawful that was.
That's right.
If you've got a reason for slapping me like this, then give the reason. Where did I break the law? But if there's no reason, why are you slapping me?
You just broke the law if there's no reason.
And I think Jesus is trying to get this guy to think.
Oh,
think about what you're doing.
That's right.
Because he loves this man's soul.
That's right.
And I think as we look throughout this whole last day of Jesus before he's going to be laid in the heart of the earth for 3 days, he's always reaching out whenever he can to save somebody's soul.
Yeah.
Because that's for him what it's all about.
That's right. And we're watching this now. He's standing in front of the high priest. It is begun. You know, he knows what this day holds for him. His hour is at hand. He spoke of that many times. He knows this is it. Psalm 22, and as we look at the way they are treating him and talking to him, Psalm 22 gives us the crucifixion through the eyes of Jesus, the Son of God. Psalm 22, let me just read a couple of passages and let's think about the trial and these men as they are gnashing their teeth and all they want to do is put him to death. They've got him now and they are frothing at the mouth, and we can't forget that. Psalm 22 says this, "My God, why have you forsaken me?" Jesus says that on the cross. Why are you so far from helping me and from the words of my groaning? Oh, my God, I cry in the daytime, but you do not hear, and in the night season, and am not silent. But you are he who took me out of the womb. Think about Jesus standing there in this trial. You are he who took me out of the womb. You made me trust while on my mother's breast. I was cast upon you from birth. From my mother's womb you have been my God. Be not far from me, for trouble is near, for there is none to help. Many bulls have surrounded me. Strong bulls of Bashan have encircled me. They gape at me with their mouths like a raging and roaring lion. Now, Psalm 22 brings us, pulls us into this scene and knows they are gnashing their teeth. They are raging. They're burning within. They hate him to death, and they just want to kill him. That's why the trial is so ridiculous, is because they're blinded by their own fury. They don't care about any of that right now. They have an objective, and they will see it through. And anytime you're dealing with a court system, and the one who, you know, wants revenge so bad, you'll notice from them that they want to push it through quick. They want to slip it in as quick as they can. They don't want you looking at evidence. They just want to get the result that they came in to get. And it's always done that way because they are blinded by their own fury and anger. And it destroys what justice should be. And we're watching it right here, right now. And again, the reason why this is so powerful for us is because we know Jesus' status with God and with all of mankind. He has never sinned against anyone, and he's never sinned against his God. He said some things that were hard to hear, but they were true. That's not a sin.
Yeah, and in fact, there are a couple times where Jesus challenged the people and said, ask them, what sin do you convict me of? And they always acknowledged, well, there's nothing you've done. We just don't like what you're saying, basically, was the response.
Yep.
But I think there are two important lessons here for us. One you just touched on in that we see how evil reacts to truth. And we can see that today. When we hear people getting into discussions, someone will ask a completely rational and simple question. The answer is right in front of your face, and it's very simple. And the person is so filled with rage and anger and hatred and the desire to defend their own lust and their own position that oftentimes they can't even answer the question. They're just so confused because they've denied reality.
Yeah.
And that's how it's going to be. Which leads me to the second point. As we see that, and as we see people in these days becoming bolder and bolder in their criticisms and their accusations against Jesus and those who follow him, it may very well be that one day one of us, or someone who might be listening to this, will stand before a group of people, whether it's a legal court or whatever it might be, and face accusations or have answers demanded from them. And this is what it's going to be like.
And no answer will suffice.
No answer. You cannot give a reasonable answer in the face of overpowering emotion. And that's what's happening here. And that's why Jesus doesn't answer. Unless he's forced to, or unless there's a point of truth he can make that addresses a situation, he says nothing, because it wouldn't avail. And the same will be true if ever one of us is in a situation like this. Answers won't mean a thing. All we can do is proclaim Jesus Christ.
Yeah, he's showing us right here that even in this dark and terrible moment, which could come upon any of us, and probably does in some form or fashion, that we can honor God. And we can continue to stand on the truth, not something we came up with or we're proud because it was our idea. It's God's truth. It's unchangeable and it's everlasting. And the hope and the surety of that, that's the only thing that can truly help us to be like Jesus in a moment like this, is that I know what the truth is. And actually, we all do, as you pointed out. It's just some here are not real excited about accepting that truth. Mm-hmm. And so we can stand up and hold our character together. And so since we're following John's gospel, the Matthew, Mark, and Luke talk about other moments, other conversations, things that were said. The chief priests, the elders, the Pharisees, the council, they have all had their chance to try him. They demand that he says that he's the Son of God. And once he says, "You said rightly that I am," and you'll see the Son of Man coming in the clouds, he tells them that, and then they go berserk. And the high priest does the classic move that shows that, you know, the worst thing in the world has just happened by tearing his garment. And then he says, "Well, what do you think? I think he's deserving of death." And so they don't actually cast an official vote like they should have, where each individual votes and that's turned in. They demanded a group vote immediately. Yeah. Again, let's speed this up. Is he deserving of death? Everyone agrees he's deserving of death. That is obviously blasphemy. And so they're going to march him out. And that brings us back into what John's saying to us. Verse 28 says, "Then they led Jesus from Caiaphas to the praetorium. And it was early morning. But they themselves did not go into the praetorium, lest they should be defiled, but that they might eat the Passover. Pilate went out to them and said, 'What accusation do you bring against this man?'" How embarrassing. They've already punched and beaten this man, blindfolded with his hands tied. There was no trial that ever took place. They've simply gone through a simple step so they could tell people, "Oh yeah, he went through a trial. He was questioned." And now they're worried about stepping on Gentile property because that would defile them. They have the Lamb of God in their possession bound, and they're worried because they wouldn't be able to partake of the Lamb. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
How sad.
It's such a, everything you see about this. I mean, it's what Jesus told the mob when they came to arrest him at the garden. "This is your hour and the power of darkness." This is the devil unleashing everything he's got on Jesus. And so we're seeing blasphemy, sacrilege, hypocrisy, every aspect of wickedness and evil. The basest emotions of man are just being turned loose here.
That's right.
On one object, the Lamb of God.
That's right.
He is the focus of their hatred because he teaches against everything that they have turned their hearts toward. They have placed themselves in Satan's service in rebellion to God. And now that they think they have the Son of God in their power, they are giving him everything they've got.
Yeah. And so now for the first time we see Pilate is introduced to us, says that they brought him in. They wouldn't go in, but they got him up to Pilate. Pilate comes out to them. You know he's thrilled about that. Now he has to go out to them. And he says, "What accusation do you bring against this man?" Now, who is Pilate? I mean, we know very little about him.
Yeah, there's not really all we know about Pilate is what's recorded in the Gospels. We don't know much of his background. Obviously, he gained enough favor or attention from the emperor to be posted as the procurator was his official Roman title.
That's right.
We kind of refer to him as the governor. He was the Roman authority, the representative of Rome in Palestine. So he was the chief guy. He spoke for the emperor. We only know a little bit about him after all of this. He served for a couple more years in Palestine, in Judea. Mm-hmm. He was governor there for about 10 years, from 26 to 36 AD. He apparently went back to Rome in disgrace. We're not sure, but he did kind of retire. And we don't believe he lived for very long after all of these events, you know, maybe a few years.
Yeah.
But he just comes out of nowhere here in the Gospels and then disappears because his most important role in history is to render judgment on Jesus.
That's right. And so here he is. He comes out and we can see there's tension already. He says, "What accusation do you bring against this man?" They answered and said to him, "If he were not an evildoer, we would not have delivered him up to you." Then Pilate said to them, "You take him and judge him according to your law." Well, that makes sense, doesn't it? "You take him and judge him according to your law." Therefore, the Jews said to him, "It's not lawful for us to put anyone to death." Now Pilate knows what they want. that the saying of Jesus might be fulfilled, which he spoke, signifying by what death he would die. Then Pilate entered the praetorium again, called Jesus, and said to him, Are you the king of the Jews? So the questioning begins. Pilate has now called Jesus into his presence, and he doesn't seem to be taking any of this very seriously. No crown on his head. He's already been beat up by the Jewish religious elite. Are you the king of the Jews? I mean, just give me an answer. We're going to watch the Jews shift now with Pilate. They have to be careful. They need him, but they also need him to do something they want him to do. So they say, look, listen, Mr. Pilate, if he wasn't an evildoer, if he wasn't a malcontent, we would never have troubled you, sir.
Yeah, this answer is, again, you see evil. He is acting as a rational governor at this point.
Right.
Okay, you've brought this guy before me. What's the accusation? You want me to render a judgment as the representative of Rome. What's his problem? Notice how they do not answer him. They don't give him an accusation. They just say, well, if he hadn't done something wrong, we wouldn't be here.
We know better than that.
Yeah. Oh, so that doesn't even answer the question.
No, it does not.
So they don't have an accusation to bring against him that would be valid in Roman law. Are they going to say, in fact, they do say later, well, he made himself the Son of God. That's what we have against him. He claimed to be Messiah. We don't like that. Well, that doesn't mean anything to a Roman. And
no.
It's like he says, here, you go judge him according to your law.
Yep.
That's a Jew thing. I'm Rome. I don't need to deal with that. So then they have to play the next card. Well, it isn't lawful for us to put anyone to death. That's the first thing Pilate's heard about this.
Yeah.
Death.
Wow, okay.
Okay, so you're talking about a capital crime here.
He's done something that you haven't told me about.
Yeah.
Now he's deserving of death.
Yeah, so this is not just your average civil case now. So now Pilate needs more information. And taken aback by this, then, as we see, he goes to Jesus and asks him a rational question. Are you the king of the Jews? And Jesus asks him a rational question. How did you hear it? What is the basis for that question? And so Pilate has some interesting things to say about this. But I do want to say, even though we don't know much about Pilate from history, we learn a lot about him from this account.
Oh, yeah.
How peevish and unprincipled and how small this individual is.
Yeah.
How deeply he's concerned about his own position and how he puts himself in a quandary by knowing the right thing to do, but then being afraid to do it.
Yeah, that's right.
And that tortures him.
Yes.
As it would anyone.
That's right.
If you know what's right to do, then do it.
Mm-hmm.
You'll be okay.
Yeah.
But when you have doubts, I know I need to do this, but you have just opened yourself up for all kinds of misery. And we see Pilate going through that starting at this point.
Yeah, if you make judgment because you think the people will go berserk, then you're not the leader. The people are. And their demands and insisting that they'll misbehave if you don't do what they want, that's embarrassing. We need to say as well that in Luke 23, Luke tells us that there's between this back and forth between Pilate and the Jews, that they said that he's been teaching this doctrine from Galilee and then on into where we are now. And Pilate says, Galilee. Well, then he's not my problem. If he's from Galilee, he's Herod's problem. And that's how, John doesn't mention it, but that's how Jesus is sent now from Pilate. He sends him over to Herod. And it doesn't take very long because all this happens in the morning. So he goes to Herod. Herod questions him. Herod's hoping that he'll do some trick, some miracle for him. He doesn't do it. He just stands there. And so Herod gets tired of it. They put a royal robe on him to make fun of him. And they kick him out. They send him back to Pilate. Herod says, he ain't my problem. He won't even talk to me. And then Luke says, from that time, Herod and Pilate became friends because they had an issue before. And it was settled in this time with Jesus. And I'm just curious how...
Yeah.
It was this moment that said, you know what, you're a pretty cool guy. But anyway, that's what happened with Herod. And so yeah. Now we're gonna slide back over. Now he's in front of Pilate in verse 34. And as they're talking together, you mentioned some of this here. Jesus answered him after Pilate asked about the king of the Jews. Jesus answered him, "Are you speaking for yourself about this, or did others tell you this concerning me?" Pilate answered, "Am I a Jew? Your own nation and the chief priests have delivered you to me. What have you done?" Jesus answered, "My kingdom is not of this world. If my kingdom were of this world, my servants would fight, so that I should not be delivered to the Jews. But now, my kingdom is not from here." Pilate therefore said to him, "Are you a king then?" Jesus answered, "You rightly say that I am a king. For this cause I was born, and for this cause I have come into the world, that I should bear witness to the truth. Everyone who is of the truth hears my voice." Pilate said to him, "What is truth?" And when he had said this, he went out again to the Jews and said to them, "I find no fault in him at all."
Yeah, interesting interchange here. This is one of the few times we see Jesus speaking at length. And it's because he's respecting Pilate's questions.
Yep.
Because Pilate's not going off the dial yet. He's actually seeking information. Are you the king of the Jews? Well, how did you get this information? Why are you asking me this question? And he says, "Well, am I a Jew? Your own people, you know, they sent you here." And so Jesus tells him the truth. "My kingdom is not of this world." So yes, I am a king, but not in the sense that you or anyone else is thinking of it. He's basically saying, "I am a spiritual king." And when Pilate understands this and asks him, "Are you a king then?" Again, Jesus tells him the truth. "You say rightly that I am a king." We would today say, "You said it."
That's right.
You've said it. So I'm agreeing. And he tells him again what manner of king he is. And it's so ironic. Here, Pilate is standing in the presence of truth incarnate.
That's right.
Jesus had said, "I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father but by me." And Pilate's looking at him like, "What is truth?" Well, truth, our definition of it for today, truth is the best explanation for what we see. It is the best explanation we have for what is reality. And so when someone comes along and says, "Well, you have my truth, you have your truth," that's not in touch with reality.
No.
That's relativism. Jesus is touching on reality here. Everyone who hears my voice is hearing the truth. They bear witness of the truth. Everyone who hears my voice is of the truth. Why? Because I am the truth.
That's right.
Everything I say is truth. I proclaim truth. I never lie. I never misrepresent the facts. I never explain reality in an incorrect way.
That's right.
I always give the truthful answer to a question. I always proclaim and make a truthful statement. So there again, when we hear Jesus speak, we have confidence in that because we know it's truth.
That's right.
And if we ever have a question like Pilate, and I believe he was being kind of satirical. I mean, he was a pagan skeptic. What is truth? Well, that's an important question. What is truth? Because that's going to be the basis for everything that we believe. Whatever we decide is truth is going to be the foundation for what we build our beliefs on. And if we accept Jesus' testimony about himself, that he is the truth, we can build our lives on him. We can live truth, we can believe truth, and we can proclaim truth.
Yeah, that's right. I'm glad you brought that up because we talked about the six different courts that he stands in front of throughout this day, but there's actually seven. And the seventh court is all of us because we can watch him. Mm-hmm. We can watch what he says.
Yep.
We're supposed to evaluate him too. Is he the Lamb of God without spot and without blemish? And we believe that he absolutely is. And so he's on trial in front of us every time we go through this. Verse 39. Pilate, he says in 38, "I find no fault in him at all." We want to watch that because he's going to say it three times. This is the first time. "I find no fault in him at all." 39, "But you have a custom that I should release someone to you at the Passover." You know, Pilate's thinking, "Whew, you got a way out of this thing." Do you therefore want me to release to you the king of the Jews? Then they all cried again, not this man, but Barabbas. And John says, now Barabbas was a robber.
Mm.
And so he tried to offer them a different option. We all know Jesus shouldn't be crucified. You have a custom, and I will honor that custom. Which man do you want? And so they scream for Barabbas.
Yeah, I've always seen kind of an interesting contrast here, because Barabbas in Hebrew is son of a father.
Yeah.
So here you have a choice. He's giving them a choice. And we're going to see increasing levels of intensity as Pilate tries to get off the hook. As you pointed out, here's his first proclamation. He's innocent. So the Jews are going, okay, wow, we need to amp this up. And Pilate tries to take a way out. There's a custom here. I get to release somebody. So do you want the son of a father, or do you want the son of the father?
Yeah.
Well, we want a robber instead of the son of God, the one that the father sent to earth to speak for him. Yeah. Give us a robber. And the other gospel writers tell us he was also a murderer, because he had killed during an insurrection.
That's right.
Why he was being held. So we got a robber and a murderer against the innocent son of God. And the Jews knew he was innocent, but give us the robber instead.
He's not up there because he's innocent. He's up there because they hate him.
So Pilate's still up against it. That he failed this gambit. And so he's got to take maybe a little stronger course.
Yeah. And so we see Jesus say to Peter, Simon bar Jonah. And we know that means Simon, son of, bar is son of, Jonah. We see that used from time to time. And when Jesus prays, he says, Abba, Father. So that's where you're getting the Barabbas, just to make that clear, that bar Abba is literally son of the father, son of a father.
Son of a father.
Son of a father.
It's general.
Mm-hmm. And there's just an interesting picture there. There's two there that are son of a or the father, and they pick the wrong one. So in chapter 19, Pilate's going to move to his next necessary step in his mind. Pilate took Jesus and scourged him. And the soldiers twisted a crown of thorns and put it on his head, and they put on him a purple robe. Then they said, Hail, King of the Jews! And they struck him with their hands. Pilate then went out again and said to them, Behold, I am bringing him out to you, that you may know that I find no fault in him. This is the second time that he has publicly said to them, he has done nothing wrong. And yet here he is, bloodied up from head to toe. We've put him through the scourging to fix whatever issue you have. I'm not killing this man.
Yeah, and here we see really the lack of compassion and the ruthlessness of Pilate and his willingness to do whatever it takes to get off the hook. Mm. He offered a choice. You know, I'm going to let a guy go here during the Passover, which is the custom. How about Jesus? No, we want Barabbas. Ooh, now what do I do? Well, the other gospel writers indicate that Pilate told them, I will scourge him and then let him go. And so he does that. He knows Jesus didn't deserve a scourging, but he's hoping, okay, if I punish him, maybe that'll satisfy the Jews. They right. want him put to death, but yep. I don't want to go that far, so I'll scourge him. That's the next worst thing, which is, you know, horrible punishment. We've described that in the past, and most Bible students are familiar with how horrible and physically traumatic this is. But he scourges him and then brings out this bloodied individual before them, hoping, okay, maybe this will satisfy the Jews. And tells them again, look, I've even scourged him, and I still don't find any fault in him, so I'm just going to let him go. Well, that's not what the Jewish leaders want.
No, it's not. After the scourging, we talked about the Roman soldiers and their perfecting of scourging it. He is covered in his own blood. And they make a crown of thorns after the scourging and force it down on his brow. And they put this royal robe on his body so that he can be sent out as a mock king of the Jews. They're making fun of the Jewish nation. They're making fun of these bloodthirsty animals that are out here demanding this man's death. And they're making fun of Jesus. Literally, they're making fun of Jesus, the Son of God. And in verse 5, after he says, I'm bringing him out so you may know, he says in verse 5, then Jesus came out wearing the crown of thorns and the purple robe. And Pilate said to them, behold the man. Therefore, when the chief priest and the officers saw him, they cried out, saying, crucify him, crucify him. So again, with all of the damage to his frame and what they did to him through the night and in the morning, how they punched him and beat him up, Pilate puts this Roman torture on him, and he comes out. He's probably barely standing up. And they are so, again, blind and furious that we will not leave here until you put him to death. And I'm with Pilate. I would think, okay, if they when they see this, they're going to say, oh, we're in too deep. We made a mistake. This is too much. That's what they should have said. God giving them a chance in this moment to say, oh boy, we better back off of this. He's done nothing wrong. We're in trouble. This is not good. And they, not for one second, do they even get a sense that they're wrong.
Yep. This doesn't satisfy their bloodlust. And so they finally, now they're demanding and harping on what they really want. In fact, the Greek is emphatic here. They said, cried out saying, crucify, crucify.
Yeah.
And look who's saying it. It's not the people. It's the chief priests and the officers.
They're out on display
the
now.
The Jewish leadership. Yep. Now, this is what they want. They want Jesus murdered. And Pilate knows exactly what it is.
That's right. There are two gospels that say that Pilate knew that they brought him to him out of envy.
Mm-hmm.
He knows exactly what their problem is. He can see right through it. But he, again, like you said, he's stuck. Something else, I try to watch what Pilate says and see what I can find. I mean, Pilate, when he brings him out, he's looking at Jesus too. And he turns to the crowd, and he's been saying, here's your King of the Jews. You know, he's making fun of him. But here he says something different. He says, behold the man. It's echo homo. I think he's amazed that he's still standing. Mm. And he says, behold the man. I sense that with him. And I also sense with the way Jesus has been talking to him and the conversations they've had that Pilate's been at parties with all royalty. He knows Caesar. He's seen pomp and royal display. But I am telling you, he has never seen a man like this to conduct himself, to hold himself the way that Jesus has, and to speak peacefully and calmly, like you said, fully in charge, that he has got to be taken back by some of this.
Well, I believe he knew Jesus was someone special, which is what you're indicating here, the way he is carrying himself, and that Pilate's never seen anything like this. We can recall that his wife sent a message to him while all this was going on saying, don't have anything to do with that man, for I have suffered much in a dream about him this night. So,
oh boy,
Pilate knows there's something beyond the normal here that is involving this man. And that's why I think we're seeing this turmoil, this emotional turmoil concerning Pilate and how he has to decide this issue, especially in what John has next to say about him.
That's right. So they say, crucify him, crucify him. They're not impressed at all with what Pilate has done to him so far. Pilate said to them, you take him and crucify him, for I find no fault in him. Now, they are yelling now. Everyone's screaming. And Pilate is saying out loud again at the top of his voice, he has done nothing wrong. The Jews answered him, we have a law, and according to our law, he ought to die because he made himself the Son of God. Therefore, when Pilate heard that saying, he was the more afraid and went in again into the praetorium and said to Jesus, where are you from? But Jesus gave him no answer.
And there we can see why he was more afraid. He'd had his wife's warning, a dream, so he knows this is coming from outside the normal avenues of communication and what have you. Whatever his concept of the supernatural and of God might be, someone or something has told his wife in a dream that you better not get involved with this man.
Have nothing to do with this man, yep.
But he's inextricably involved now. He can't get out of it. And he's actually being dragged in deeper and deeper because he's gone about as far as he can to try to let Jesus go while he's still alive. And as you mentioned, he drags him out bloodied and scourged. And he's basically saying, look at this man. Look at him. Doesn't this satisfy your bloodlust?
Exactly.
No, it doesn't. Crucify. We want the final step. And so he declares again, he is innocent. Rome has declared him innocent again. So when they finally tell him the real hang-up they have with him, he made himself the Son of God. Now he's even more afraid. He's got what his wife told him. Now he's got what they're telling him. And he goes and in this fear asks him, where are you from?
Yeah. He goes back into his private quarters, the praetorium, away from the Jewish mob. And he says, talk to me. Where are you from? Give me something. And Jesus gave him no answer. So in verse 10 says, then Pilate said to him, are you not speaking to me? Do you not know that I have power to crucify you and the power to release you? And Jesus said to him, you could have no power at all against me unless it had been given to you from above. Therefore, the one who delivered me to you has the greater sin. From then on, Pilate sought to release him, but the Jews cried out, saying, if you let this man go, you are not Caesar's friend. Whoever makes himself a king speaks against Caesar. And so now this is the final blow from them. We are going to tell Caesar that you let a king walk away after we turned him into you.
So here's really the climax of the whole thing. Pilate has declared him innocent, punished him unjustly, but hoping that would satisfy the Jews and quiet them down. It's not going to. He asks a final question of Jesus, and Jesus gives him a truthful answer on where authority really comes from.
That's right.
Don't you know I have power to release you or to crucify you? And Jesus says, you would have no power at all unless it were given to you from above. Well, that's true. And Pilate sees that because it tells him from that point on, he sought to release him. Pilate wants to let him go, but the Jews simply will not have it. And so they play their trump card. He's claiming to be a king. And if you don't do what we want you to do, we're going to let Caesar know about this. That we brought someone before you who claimed to be a king. There's only one king, and in fact, Matthew says, we have no king but Caesar. That's what the Jewish leaders said in their hypocrisy.
Yeah, they say it here,
and,
too.
Mm-hmm. You know, Caesar's our king. Now they're putting a sword, figuratively speaking, to Pilate's throat. If you don't do something about this, then you are not a friend of Caesar. Well, that forces Pilate's hand. He's got to deal with that because now he's faced with a choice. Do I go with this man who is from somewhere that I just don't really understand? He's different, and I've been warned about him. Or do I go with protecting myself? So it's the choice we all are faced with. Do I choose Jesus or self?
Yeah.
He chooses himself.
He chooses himself and makes a huge mistake. If he lets this thing get out of hand, he's going to have to answer to Caesar. And now if he doesn't kill him, they're going to go report it to Caesar that he's not Caesar's friend. In verse 13, when Pilate therefore heard that saying, he brought Jesus out. He sat down in the judgment seat in a place that is called the pavement, but in Hebrew, Gabbatha. Now it was the preparation day of the Passover and about the sixth hour. And he said to the Jews, behold your king. One more time. He's going to rub it in. Behold your king. But they cried out, away with him, away with him, crucify him. Pilate said to them, shall I crucify your king? The chief priests answered, we have no king but Caesar.
Yep. And this is so sad. Because as I mentioned, they've rejected God. Matthew indicates that at this point, Pilate had a bowl of water brought out and washed his hands of the whole affair. And basically told them, His blood's not on my hands. I'm just disassociating myself from all of this. The Jewish leaders said, "His blood be on us and our children." Think about that a second. Okay, we'll accept the responsibility. The blood of Jesus Christ, the Son of God, be on us, and not just on us, on our children. And God accepts that. Okay, you are bearing the responsibility. You will suffer the consequences. But what we've seen of Jesus so far is that he's been up all the previous day, that previous night. Now it's early morning in the praetorium before Pilate. He's been subjected to insults. He's been taunted. He's been blasphemed. He's been slapped and punched and beaten with rods, with a crown of thorns on his head. Finally, we see that he is being scourged and humiliated before the people. And yet, in fulfillment of prophecy and in total self-control, as a sheep before its shearers is dumb, as Isaiah said, so he did not open his mouth. And so in verse 16, John tells us, Pilate delivered him to be crucified. So they took Jesus and led him away.